Marcus Agrippa, The Battle of Actium, Part 1. Now, in preparation for a final decisive battle in the spring, Antony had moved his fleet into the shallow waters of the Gulf of Ambracia, establishing a camp for his army to guard it on the southern peninsula facing the unpredictable Ionian Sea, near a small hamlet called Actium. Measuring about 40 kilometers, or 25 miles long, and 15 kilometers, or 9 miles wide, the Gulf of Ambracia must have first seemed to Antony as a safe harbor for his and Cleopatra's fleet. But as a month passed, it became increasingly apparent that their ships were becoming trapped in the narrow entrance to the Ionian Sea, which was only 700 meters wide channel between Actium on the south and Berenike on the north. This formed a natural bottleneck which Octavian ships now blockaded. The southern promontory projected northwards like a spike into the channel formed by the curve of the opposite shore. Antony had already taken the prime position on the southern promontory and established his army camp close to Actium, a place sacred to the god Apollo. He erected watchtowers on each side of the spur of land at the entrances of the channel and stationed ships in between to patrol it. Antony may have expected to come to battle with Octavian earlier in the year. He installed his men on the farther side of the narrows beside the sanctuary of Apollo in a level and broad space, but its disadvantages as a long-term base of operation soon revealed itself. The site was more suitable as a place for fighting than for encamping. It was because of this fact, more than any other, that they suffered severely from disease, not only in the winter, but much more during the summer. Even today, the shoreline is broken up by numerous marshes, which form an estuary system. Malaria and dysentery are two diseases suspected of afflicting Antony's troops. Agrippa's successful raids on Antony's supply ships denied Antony's men much-needed fresh food. The morale of the ordinary men, which had been high at the start of the year, sank as the heat rose and their living conditions worsened. Nevertheless, Antony still held on to the Gulf of Corinth and employed the steward, the freedman Theopolis, in the city to receive grain from parts of Greece which were still loyal to him, then relay them to Anticyra on across the Gulf, the coast of Boeotia, while under close supervision of officers and men under his orders. News reached Antony the consulship he expected to receive on January the 1st, 31 BCE, was denied him, and instead Octavian was sworn in with Valerius Marcella Corvinus. He was now a private citizen without legal authority to act in the name of Rome. In a snub to the Senate, Antony used the title of consul anyway. Arriving at Corsia in June or July, Imperator Caesar Dive Philis landed his troops on the shores of Epirus and took up a position on the high ground, there from which there is a view over the outer sea around the Paxos Islands and over the inner Ambracian Gulf, as well as over the intervening waters. He quickly fortified his position, constructing walls from it down to Gomaras, the outer harbor. In keeping with this defensive posture, rather than run the gauntlet and sailing his ships through the channel to the Gulf, Dio reports that Octavian had many of his triremes dragged overland, using newly flayed hides smeared with olive oil instead of runways. Yet I am unable to name any exploit of these ships inside the Gulf, and therefore cannot believe the tradition, for certainly there would have been no small task to draw triremes over so narrow and uneven tract of land on hides. Nevertheless, this feat is said to have been accomplished in the manner described. Now, Octavian's men, who enjoyed clean water from the nearby springs and the Luros River and fresh provisions from Italy, were in good health and high spirits. Agrippa joined Octavian, and together the men worked on their campaign strategy. They knew this was their chance to deal a devastating blow to Antony, and Antony realized it too. To tip the odds in his favor, Antony moved some of his troops across the strait and set up camp directly facing his opponent, while his cavalry rode around the Gulf to attack Octavian from the east. His men harried Octavian's as they dug their fortifications of a ditch, palisade, and the usual watchtowers. The particular target of his attack, Octavian's valuable supply of fresh water. Plutarch reports that Antony was also thought to have shown great skill in enclosing sources of potable water behind secure barriers that deprived the enemy of it, since there were few places to find it and the ones that were there sometimes tasted bad. In response, Octavian dispatched some troops to mainland Greece and Macedonia with the intention of drawing Antony away. Indeed, he enjoyed some success when Titus and Taurus made a sudden charge on Antony's cavalry, defeated it, and won over Philadelphios, the king of Paphlagonia. Antony's tactical move, however, meant the troops were now split on both sides of the Gulf. Agrippa took this opportunity to make a sudden dash with his fleet. With Antony's navy effectively trapped in the Gulf of Ambracia, Agrippa's ships were largely free to roam the adjacent Gulf of Corinth and sail down the western coast of the Peloponnesus. There they harassed their adversary's men, sank his warships, and grain transports. It seems, at least to judge by his successes, that Agrippa relished the assignment. With his flotilla and troops of marines, he was very effective in hit-and-run missions. Many of the targets were high strategic value, which Antony could ill afford to lose. Finally, right before the eyes of Antony and his fleet, Agrippa stormed Leucas, where he captured numerous of Antony's ships. Then he took Patrae, conquering Nicias in a sea fight, seized Corinthus, strategically important city, and before the final conflict had twice defeated the fleet of the enemy. The island of Leucas, lying south of Actium, was a significant win for Agrippa. His vessels were stationed there, and in the Bay of Gomorrah to the north. He could effectively run a blockade and attack any ships of Antony's fleet attempting to enter or leave the strait. Now, on land, Octavian tried to provoke Antony into a fight. He would constantly draw his infantry up in battle order in front of the enemy camp, often sailed against them with his ships and carried off their transports, with the object of joining battle with only such that were present, before Antony's entire command could be assembled. For this very reason, the latter was unwilling to stake his all on the cast, and he had recourse for select days to feeling out his enemy and skirmish until he had gathered his legions. The historian Orosius gives a report that presents a different picture, in which Antony decided to hasten the beginning of the battle. But after quickly drawing up his troops, he advanced towards Octavian's camp, but suffered defeat, failing to make any significant impact on his opponent. 3 days later, Antony evacuated his second camp on the Epirot side of the Gulf and withdrew under the cover of night to his main base at Actium. In Antony's headquarters, the presence of Cleopatra seemed to be more of a hindrance than a help. In the wake of these military reverses and dwindling grain supplies, Antony called a council of war. According to the historian Dio, the Egyptian queen, allegedly unsettled by bad predictions, won the day with her advice that they should entrust the best strategic positions to garrisons and that the rest should depart to Egypt with herself and Antony. Her fears affected Antony, who began to suspect everyone else who remained of scheming against him. Among many he tortured and put to death Imbilicus, king of the tribe of the Arabians, and handed over Senator Q. Postumus to be ripped apart. As the last days of August counted down, Antony suffered several high-profile defections, among them the client kings of Galatia, who had been sent into Macedonian Thrace to recruit mercenaries, and Diotarus and the Roman Domitius Anobarbus, smarting from unrelenting abuse by the queen. Practical man of many years' military experience and consul in 32 BCE, Anobarbus was a loyal friend of Antony, fighting with him in Armenia. But even he could no longer stand to have his advice and recommendations overruled by the woman from Egypt. He left the camp in the dark and slipped over the channel, where he presented himself to Octavian. Deeply upset by the betrayal, nevertheless, Antony respected the man and had his personal effects and slaves sent over in another boat. So the battle is about to begin, the Great Battle of Actium. Now the sources for this, The Lives of the Caesars by Suetonius, Annals of Imperial Rome by Tacitus, 12 Caesars by Grant, Cleopatra by Grant, Marcus Agrippa, Right-Hand Man of Caesar Augustus by Powell. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question. Leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.